Hello and welcome to the Beacon Podcast. Beacon is a project of the Maine People's Alliance. You can subscribe at mainebeacon.com or on your favorite podcasting app. Find us on the radio too at WERU in the Midcoast and Downeast and Bangor and WRFR in Rockland. I'm Kate Blackford, Public Policy Director, and with me today is special guest Lisa Margulies. She is VP of Public Affairs for Planned Parenthood Maine Action Fund. Lisa is going to talk with us about some of the likely impacts that this election and the Trump presidency and the Republican Congress are going to have on reproductive health and what we need to be doing to prepare. Lisa, thank you so much for being here. Really grateful. One of the things I was telling colleagues this week is that my personal way of managing some of my stress as we've been through the last couple of weeks has been to read the state news, but not follow closely what's happening at the national level and just try and rely on people to tell me what I need to be paying attention to as opposed to trying to figure that out for myself. So I am extra grateful that you're here and that you have been following all of those terrible things so that you can tell me what I need to do instead of me having to be in the midst of all of it. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here. And that's a totally understandable reaction right now.
I'm glad. So before we dig into this about what's going on, what the risks are, and what we need to be doing, tell me a little bit more about you. Like, how did you come to this work?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think it's more important than ever to kind of remind ourselves of how we got to this work to fortify ourselves for the fight ahead. I got to this work largely because of events that happened in my personal life. For many years, I'm a lawyer by training. I was a public defender in Philadelphia. And then for many years, worked all over the country on criminal justice reform. Then I got pregnant and I had a really difficult time. I had a really difficult pregnancy. And I witnessed the ways that I think our healthcare system, our country fails pregnant people, fails families. And even with an immense amount of privilege, I suffered greatly during pregnancy, and not just in pregnancy, but also after pregnancy, seeing the ways in which families don't get the support they need to survive and thrive. And while all this was happening, there were events on the national stage that really rocked me. And it wasn't just the fall of Roe. It was also the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh, continuing attacks on the abortion pill. And I think the personal fed into the political. And I realized that this was my moment and this was my calling because I needed to build a better future for my children and create a world in which my children could thrive. So it really happened organically. And I'm so glad it did. It's where I need to be right now.
That's amazing. Well, not amazing in terms of the things that you had to go through, but that's amazing that it led you to this place. Because I feel like for so many folks, you know, it can lead to a place of just disempowerment. And I'm so, so glad that this is where you decided that you wanted to be putting your skills and your energy.
I feel so lucky to be in this role and to get to be a part of this organization and work with the colleagues and partners that I do. It's a very special role. It's a very special privilege.
Yeah. Come back to the reason that you're here. What is happening? What is at stake, both nationally and here in Maine right now, when it comes to reproductive rights, when it comes to reproductive health, when it comes to supporting families? What are we looking at?
That's a big question. And I think first, it's really important to remember that Trump was already in office and did a lot of damage in his first term. Because of him, millions of people are living under abortion bans right now. People are dying preventable deaths. And we're facing a national healthcare crisis that's worsening every day. During his campaign, Trump backed away from previous statements about banning abortion, probably because he knows that abortion bans are increasingly unpopular. And that's not news to really any of us. We know that the vast majority of Americans and the vast majority of Mainers overwhelmingly support reproductive rights. which I note was proven yet again this month at the ballot box in Maine, when Maine voters reelected a pro-reproductive rights majority to Augusta for the second time since the fall of Roe in 2022. So coming back to Trump, we know that in October, he made the decision to publicly state that he would veto a national abortion ban, again, likely because he knew it was costing him votes. And we will fight like hell to hold him to that. But the truth is, Trump doesn't need to sign a national abortion ban to severely restrict access to reproductive health care in Maine and around the country. And he can do it without Congress and without the courts. And while Maine has strong laws protecting reproductive health care, there are any number of actions Trump could take that would supersede our state laws. So one of the ways he could do this is through funding cuts. Project 2025 lays out a plan to throttle reproductive health care providers by eliminating funding, which could really imperil providers' ability to keep their doors open. And so we anticipate that he will almost immediately reinstitute a gag rule on Title X funding, which is something he did in his first term. And I won't get into the details, but that amounts to about $400,000 that Planned Parenthood of Northern New England would need to absorb here in Maine, and much more when you include Maine's Family Planning Network as a whole.
Wait, can I just pop in for a tiny second? Can you explain what Title X is for our listeners?
Yeah. So Title X is a federal funding source dedicated to affordable birth control and reproductive health care, and it specifically supports people with low incomes. So the gag rule in Trump's first term made it illegal for any provider in the Title X program to tell patients how or where they could access abortion care, as well as imposed really cost prohibitive and unnecessary physical separation requirements on healthcare centers that provide abortion. And so, you know, providers like PPNNE were forced out of the program as a result.
Which then reduced access overall.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to say that Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, part of the mission is to provide care to anyone who needs it, no matter what, regardless of ability to pay. And PPNNE provides millions of dollars of free and reduced care each year. But we're already navigating an extremely difficult financial situation, given that reproductive health care has been undervalued for generations. And all of that has been worsened by the pandemic, increased demand for free and discounted care, insufficient reimbursement rates, not to mention ongoing and worsening political attacks. So withholding funding is an extremely powerful tool to reduce access. But of course, it's not the only one.
So what else? What else? You kind of terrified me when you were saying that it doesn't take Congress and it doesn't take the courts and that it can just be through executive action. So what are the other things that Mainers should be watching for coming down?
Yeah, and I think we can talk in a little bit about why you shouldn't feel hopeless, why there is hope, and why we have the ability to protect care in Maine and what we need to do to make sure that we do protect care in Maine. But the other piece to know about, and you know, sadly, there's a lot in Project 2025, but another piece memorialized in Project 2025 that Trump could immediately deploy is to criminalize providers for mailing or receiving abortion supplies, including abortion medication, by misinterpreting and misapplying the Comstock Act, which is a federal law from 1873.
From 1873. Okay.
That's right. Still on the books. And that was half a century before any women in this country had the right to vote. And what that could do is really restrict the flow of necessary supplies for abortion, both between and in states, and that would apply here in Maine. And in fact, Maine has been identified as one of the top 10 states in which patients would suffer the most from a nationwide medication abortion ban, in part because we're so rural. So around 70% of patients who seek abortion care at PPNNE health centers opt to receive medication abortion. And again, there's a lot more in Project 2025, but I think this gives you a sense of the real harm Trump could do in his second term. And I want to stress again, Trump does not need to sign a national abortion ban to restrict access to all kinds of essential healthcare right here in Maine.
Okay. Well, then That's very sobering. Let's pivot. What is it that we need to do both as individuals, and what is it that as a state is really important for us to do in light of that potential threat? And then the other ones, of course, that could happen with Congress and the courts. Great. Yeah, we should talk about what we can do about those too.
Yeah. And just as a starting place, I think it's important to say, first, I want everyone to know that PPNNE's doors are open. PPNNE has health centers in Portland, Sanford, Topsom, and Biddeford, and will continue to provide care to anyone who needs it, no matter what. The other amazing family planning providers in the state, our partners, including Maine Family Planning and Mabel Wadsworth, are also ready and their doors remain open. We are here and will continue to be here. It's critical that in this uncertain moment where we're facing an uncertain future and it can feel overwhelming, there is something we can do, and there is something our state leaders can do to help protect access to care in Maine. And that's ensuring that our family planning providers are fully funded so that we can weather the storm ahead, which will absolutely be our priority in Maine's next legislative session starting in January. In terms of how individually folks get involved, our team is actually preparing for an action forum later this month or next month. So we'll be posting about it on social media and sending out an email. And if folks want to learn about what's next for us here in Maine and they want a safe space to be in community and talk, look for details on that. I want to acknowledge that this is a difficult moment. And so please really lean into taking care of yourself and find community. We all have to take it day by day and take breaks and recharge. And I'm saying that for myself too. But again, I want everyone to know we're still here. We're still fighting for our reproductive rights. We've faced and overcome big challenges before, and we aren't going anywhere, and we won't back down. And once you've had the chance to catch your breath, we would love for you to join us in this fight, particularly around urging legislators to fund family planning so that our doors can remain open into the future.
That's awesome. Is there anything that, if you have a uterus, you should be thinking about in terms of your access to care, anything you should be lining up? Is there anything that we need to be thinking about just in terms of reproductive health in general right now, as in terms of our own physical health?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And again, PPNNE's doors remain open and will continue to remain open. I think one thing to know is that PPNNE has seen an increase in patients booking appointments for things like vasectomies, as well as long-acting reversible contraception, including things like IUDs. In the first week after the election, PPNNE had 215 appointment bookings for long-acting reversible contraception, which is almost double the regular weekly average of 111. And there were similar increases in these types of requests after Trump's election in 2016 and after the Dobbs decision in 2022. So, you know, Mainers are concerned about their future ability to access basic healthcare under the incoming Trump administration. And these services remain available to the extent folks are interested in them.
I want to take a second to also celebrate. I mean, you mentioned already that we reelected in Maine sort of a pro-reproductive rights majority again for the second time. And I also saw that there were a lot of reproductive rights efforts that passed at the ballot across the country in November. So what can you tell me about some of the things that are bright spots in this landscape for us right now?
It's very clear that voters overwhelmingly support reproductive rights. Voters value bodily autonomy. Voters value the ability to receive abortion care. They value the ability to receive gender-affirming care and any health care they need when they need it. Voters don't want politicians interfering with their personal private medical decisions. And this was very clear from the success of ballot initiatives throughout the country, both in blue and red states, in this electoral cycle, but also in previous electoral cycles. The support is overwhelming, and that should give us hope. Here in Maine, you know, it's worth really repeating and being proud of the fact that voters elected a pro-reproductive rights majority to represent them in Augusta, and this is the second time they have chosen, and resoundingly chosen, to return a pro-reproductive rights majority to our state legislature since the fall of Roe. That's in line with polling showing that the vast majority of Mainers support abortion rights. And it's also a clear call to action to our state leaders to continue to protect Mainers' rights and access to care. And one sort of fact I want to point out is that despite a small and vocal minority making a lot of noise during the hearings for LD 1619, was the bill that really made Maine a leader in expanding access to abortion care post-Dobbs. It decriminalized abortion care. It allowed access to abortion later in pregnancy, and, you know, was, you know, sort of the subject of, I think, again, a small but vocal minority making a lot of noise. But I think that the fact to remember is Maine voters reelected nearly every co-sponsor of that bill. 69 of 72 co-sponsors of that bill were reelected to office. And so that really tells us that they not only respect, but are committed to having leaders who prioritize abortion access. And so I think what this speaks to is that Mainers are now counting on our elected leaders to do whatever they can to protect access to care under a Trump presidency. They were clear in 2022, they were clear in 2024, and now they're really looking to lawmakers to take proactive measures and safeguard access. And again, I think the leaders that Maine voters elected to represent us in Augusta have a really critical role to play in the next few months. And urgently, I think that's about prioritizing funding for Maine's family planning healthcare infrastructure to ensure that Mainers can get basic, essential, and often life-saving care they need right here at home. And we look forward to our reproductive rights champion, again, rising to the occasion, standing up, and meeting an unprecedented moment with swift action.
It's going to be so complicated too, right? Like, there are going to be so many things that this administration is going to try and defund. You know, they're talking about eliminating Head Start. They're talking about major cuts to, you know, climate resilience. And holy smokes, the list just goes on and on in terms of the things they want to stop doing. And I'm so grateful that we have the folks in majority and sort of in leadership that we do, because it's going to be such a challenge to navigate. How do we hold what those gaps turn out to be, and how do we make sure that we're not creating undue suffering here in Maine and we have the options for trying to fight back and respond? We're going to need everybody who's listening to this podcast to be thinking about, like, how we work together to move forward.
I think that's so true, and I think the trick is to remember, too, that all these issues are interrelated. You know, the fight for reproductive rights is the fight for workers' rights. The fight for workers' rights is the fight for environmental justice. You know, all these things are linked. I think we have to remember that the worst policies impact the most vulnerable among us the most directly and severely. And so we have to fight for everything because it's all connected and we're all part of this struggle.
Yeah, we really are. And I'm so grateful that we've got such amazing folks leading on each of these different pieces to make sure that we can braid it all together and not let folks hit one against the other, because it's really all the same people, just like you said. So the other thing I wanted to find out more about from you is that Planned Parenthood has been doing this amazing work to talk with voters more than just during elections, to talk with voters on a really personal level about their beliefs and their values when it comes to our healthcare and our reproductive rights. And I was hoping you could share just a little bit with our listeners about what that looks like and the things that you've learned and any insights you have for how we move forward politically.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. We're incredibly proud of our deep canvassing program. It's called Bridging the Gap. It began in 2018. And it's proven to increase support for pro-reproductive rights policies, motivate supporters to become activists, and increase voter engagement. It's not like traditional canvassing, where you knock on a door, have a quick conversation, maybe leave some lit, and then leave. Deep canvassing is about having meaningful conversations that foster connections and generate action. So through deep canvassing, people really relate to each other one-on-one. around shared values and open doors to understanding that promotes compassion and respect. And what it does is create space for real connection between people, connection that's not necessarily available through traditional canvassing tactics, which are more transactional. Though, of course, that type of canvassing also has real value, and there's a time and a place for that. So Bridging the Gap has helped to reduce stigma around abortion in Maine and has grown to become a model for advocates across the country. Our team has trained advocates in at least 24 states, and one of our team members actually traveled to Kenya recently at the request of advocates there to give some really intensive training. So we've gone global. And we know that in the short term, we need to do the electoral and the legislative work to get the right people in office, to pass the right policies. But the way to long-term change is by having these one-on-one, thoughtful conversations to humanize the issue. And Bridging the Gap is specifically designed to bridge partisan divides and connect on deeper common values. And I should give a plug here. This is powered by our amazing volunteers. If you're interested in participating, we'd love to have you join us. And you can get more information and get involved by visiting our website.
I feel like it's more than a strategy. It's about the way in which we change politics, right? Like that piece around building connection is, to me, at the heart of what's missing for most folks. And maybe this is really naive of me, but I continue, even after this election, to really believe that most of us have far more in common about what we want our lives to look like and how we want things to work than we have that's different. And it certainly doesn't mean that I have full agreement with everybody in my family about like what things should look like, but it really does feel like when you talk about values and when you talk about what an issue means to a person, and it's not a talking point and it's not, you know, this abstract divisive framing, that there's a lot of room for connection and there's a lot of room for agreement. And so I love that you all are building those relationships and really helping to, in some ways, depoliticize stuff because you're humanizing it. And it feels like that's just something that we need to be doing in general.
I agree. I think, you know, there's times we need to scream and yell, and we do, and we will. And to break down the barriers between us, we also really need to share our stories and humanize these issues. Because at the end of the day, there's always room to grow. And what we see is that actually in having these conversations, you start to move the needle in ways that you couldn't otherwise. I think, you know, despite some of the really divisive rhetoric and some of the divisions we see even in the Maine State House, most people, I think, have the ability and the capacity to understand and move when confronted with real life stories and a conversation that approaches these issues in a compassionate way and from a place of personal experience.
And that's not just only in one political direction. I don't feel like that's the path towards centrism or something, but I feel like there's a path towards what it is that we really need that's not just on one end or the other of the political spectrum. It's really about what is it we need as people, as families, as communities. And yeah, I think those connections are the thing that, you know, aren't really valued in our political process, but are hugely important in how we make choices overall.
Totally. You know, I also think these issues should not be partisan. Abortion should not be partisan. Abortion is healthcare. Gender affirming care is healthcare. I'll keep saying that. And when folks think about Planned Parenthood in particular, it's such a dog whistle. You know, legislators invoke our name just to get people riled up. But when you actually come into the health centers and you see this is like a normal doctor's office and what we're providing is the best medical care we can, like I actually think that begins to change how people see Planned Parenthood and what we are and who we serve.
All right. Well, you heard it here. Connection is the path forward. not all hope is lost. There are things we can do here in Maine to protect ourselves from some of the things that are likely heading our way. And it's going to take us coming together to figure out how to do that. So I don't know, Elisa, if you know this, but we typically end our podcast on our rays of hope. And I feel like we've started on that path already, which I love. And so typically what we do is we share something that might not actually be related to the topic at hand. It might not at all be connected to Maine politics. Sometimes it's just books or movies or other things that are giving us hope right now. And so I was going to ask you, what is your ray of hope right now?
Yeah, well, I have two. One is work-oriented and one is not work-oriented. So in terms of this conversation and the work, what's giving me hope is that we've been here before and we've overcome. We know what we need to do. We need to delay, defeat, defend, litigate, minimize impact, and we've defeated prior attempts at defunding and eliminating healthcare. We can do it again. And if it weren't clear before, it is now. The majority of the country is with us. The country overwhelmingly supports reproductive autonomy and believes patients and their doctors, not politicians, should be making personal private medical decisions. So we're really all in this together. Now, in terms of the personal, one of my kids is now doing somersaults all on his own for the very first time. And I tell people that this work is a gift my kids gave to me, given kind of the story I shared earlier. You know, I was moved to join this fight during my difficult pregnancy. And the truth is that they continue to keep me in the fight by really giving me these beautiful moments and reminding me exactly what I'm fighting for.
Wonderful. So my ray of hope right now is actually meditation. It's something that for a very long time, and some of our listeners may remember, I wanted to meditate. Not that I actually wanted to meditate. And I have had a couple of experiences recently where I actually felt like not only was it just breathing and was it just sort of like physically calming my nervous system, but that it actually provided some of those greater things around clarity and focus that, you know, everybody purports that meditation offers. I just started using the app Plum Village, which is from the monk Thich Nhat Hanh, and it is free and they have a ton of amazing things on there. And I've really appreciated all the things I've been learning the last week or two from them.
I love that so much. And during the pandemic, I actually, you know, re-upped on my commitment to meditation and mindfulness. And I found this amazing free online course from the University of Massachusetts Medical School. It's called Palouse Mindfulness. Highly recommend it. It's an 8-week course and it's all free and it's all online.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Lisa, so much for joining. Thank you to all 32,000 members of the Maine People's Alliance. Make sure that you rate and subscribe to the Beacon Podcast on your favorite podcasting app. And you can also find us on the radio. WERU in Midcoast, Downeast, and Bangor, and WRFR in Rockland. If you haven't already, we recommend that you also subscribe to the Beacon News Sweep, and you can get updates in your inbox daily. As always, you can ask a question or leave a comment for a future show at 207-619-3182 or email us at podcast@mainebeacon.com. You can follow us on Twitter, well, formerly known as Twitter, at ME Beacon, Instagram at Maine Beacon, all one word, and Facebook at Beacon. If you're confused at all, just look for that orange circle with the black lighthouse. And our theme music is courtesy of Chamberlain. That's all for us. Have a great week.